Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. I want to welcome you back, everyone, to the pulse of conservative talk on the internet. It's the Weekly Worldview. So good to have you back on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And, well, I want to start out this week just by congratulating myself on two accounts. First of all, here at the McBurney compound, I successfully replaced the faucet in the kitchen with a minimum of profanity. I will admit there was some profanity. I'm not going to let myself totally off the hook, but I kept it under my breath. And needless to say, the sink is working. So congratulate me on that count. Big, huge success. Minimum of bloodshed, too, although there was some bloodshed. More profanity than bloodshed, I think. But anyway, the sink is fixed and all is happy here at the McBurney compound. And I want to congratulate myself on a second note, because I know that a lot of my detractors out there think that I live in my mom's basement and I rant and rave at my computer every week, and that I'm basically a nobody, and that I might be just a little bit self-conscious about it. But anyway, I want to congratulate myself and a friend of the show, because we have a video on YouTube that has achieved just over 55,000 downloads. So, I mean, I know it's not like a cat playing with a ball that falls into a bathtub, but, you know, it's more political in nature. But I had no idea that the video had, well, I don't think viral. I think you need like a million hits before you're considered viral. But back in the day, 50,000 was a gold record. So I'm gonna say I've got a gold record on YouTube. Almost 56,000 downloads as we go to air today of the Joel Osteen prayer over Mayor Anise Parker, the lesbian who was elected mayor of Houston. Not only was she elected mayor, last week she was reelected as the mayor of Houston, and she's still there. But if you want to, anyway, if you want to go download the video and watch it, I don't really need you to, because, you know, we're over 50,000 hits, and I'm not about self-promotion in any way, and there's a link at the top of the website. You can go and you can check it out. I want to thank producer Jason Koblin for a fine job, good friend of the show there. And folks, if you're out there and you want to be a hit on YouTube, listen to this show and, you know, chop out the best of clips, which there's like 20 on every show. And put your pictures to it and get it up there on YouTube. And let's see if we can give producer Jason Koblin a run for his money in the YouTube department. Anyway, I was very excited to learn about all that this week, as my extremely attractive audio engineer will tell you that I've been mentioning it just by chance to everyone I meet. All right, folks, we're in a good mood here at the Weekly Worldview, and we'll get to exactly why as we go forward. It's not just the gold record on YouTube. Lots of good stuff happening this week. But there are some sad things happening. I want to open up in the politics file. We're going to go to Atlanta, Georgia from CBS Television. They report there that the Fulton County Health Department confirmed last Wednesday that residents at the homeless shelter where protesters from the Occupy movement have been occupying. Well, they've contracted a drug-resistant strain of tuberculosis there in the Occupy movement in Atlanta. Now, I know what you want to point out, that here at the Weekly Worldview, we had predicted that it would be syphilis that would break out first, but I should have known. I am not an epidemiologist, but I should have known that diseases that are spread through air contact were much more likely to be the first of the prominent diseases to take over the Occupy movement. What is the government down there in Atlanta? They say all persons identified as positive for TB have begun treatment and are being monitored to ensure that medication is taken as directed. Now, first of all, I'm saying, why are we giving these people medication? They want to occupy the parks and set up their own little version of society. I say we let them rot and fester in their own disease. But America is a great and good and kind and generous nation. And we've decided to offer medication to the young retro-hippie, neo-hippie, well, the losers. Let's just call them what they are. They're the losers. They're part of the 1%, and they'll always, no, they're part of, they say they're part of the 99%, right? I don't want to get that backwards. I say they're part of the 80% that people like myself have been carrying on our backs for our entire working lives. You're a part of the 20% of losers. You'll always be losers. And I think we should just set up a perimeter and let you suffer in your own filth. But no, we're going to offer them medicine. And one thing we know about the people in the Occupy movement, when offered medication, they will take it.
Yeah.
The only question they have is, dude, can we smoke it? What kind of medicine is it, man?
Oh, that's
what strain, dude? Anyway, I think it's too cold out here in Denver. I don't know if the occupiers have gone home. I think the police beat a few of them up just the other night, tear gassed a few of them. I haven't been paying that much attention to them. But let's move on in the political health file here. Apparently, out in New York City, according to NBC in New York, there is a new disease that's running rampant through the Occupy community, and they're calling it Zuccotti lung. Yeah. That's what demonstrators have dubbed the sickness that seems to be spreading among them at an unpleasantly high rate, with little sleep and cold conditions, cigarettes and drinks being passed from mouth to mouth, and few opportunities to wash their hands. Zuccotti Park may now just be the best place to catch respiratory viruses and norovirus and tuberculosis, according to doctors who have driven by and you know, cracked their windows and caught a whiff of the place. According to NBC, the damp clothing and cardboard signs wet with rain are also breeding grounds for mold. Some protesters are urinating in bottles.
No.
And yes, they are. That's when they're on their best behavior. They urinate in bottles. And they're leaving food trash discarded throughout the campground, providing further opportunities for diseases and nastiness. One 23-year-old loser from Long Island said, quote, pretty much everything here is a good way to get sick, man. It'll definitely thin the herd. Yeah, so you can see where their mentality is. Now, these are young, stupid, ignorant children who've been raised their whole lives to believe that they evolved from slime and that they're returning to slime, that there is no God, there's no judgment day, and nobody's really responsible for anything. So this 23-year-old loser's take is that it'll thin the herd. Fits right into their worldview, so to speak. Let's see. Some protesters, by the way, have refused to get flu shots, citing a government conspiracy around vaccinations. That's right. There are also increased risk among the encampment of sexually transmitted diseases, and you can well imagine why. Let's see. One doctor compared the conditions at the park to the pilgrimage at Mecca, in which entire groups of people have come down with respiratory infections in a short period of time. And you know what? As anti-Semitic as the Occupy movement has been, it's hard to tell them from the folks at the Hajj there in Mecca. Now, the health department there in New York has visited Zuccotti Park, and they are monitoring the situation. And I'm all for monitoring it, but just let them fester and quarantine them and don't let any of the disease out of the park. And eventually the Occupy movement will, it will end. All right.
You think so they'll take a vaccination so they can smoke it?
The only way they would take vaccinations is if they could put it in a pipe and smoke it. Well, put that in your pipe and smoke it, Mr. Hippie Loser. It might just save your life. All right. So that's the silly, stupid, funny news for the
funny.
Week. It's funny. There's nothing funnier than watching a loser hacking up his lung in the park, holding up his sign that says "Eat the Rich."
While the
money from the rich are being taken and put into the coffers of the New York State Health Department to get these kids some medical attention. Foolish children. All right, now you want to talk about what New York is really like? Well, no, not New York. I mean, you would think this story came from New York. The story I'm about to read from KFOX TV. This is down in Texas, believe it or not. Texas, which is perhaps the most conservative state. I don't know if I would go that far, but it's a conservative state. Where liberals would tell you that they're really trigger happy on the death penalty down there in Texas, and you don't mess with Texas. Well, listen to this, folks. This is just unbelievable. Investigators, this is from Socorro, Texas. Investigators say that a 70-year-old man was walking last Thursday in the morning around a park when they said four men got out of a late 90s minivan and demanded money from the 70-year-old man. When he said no, they grabbed him, threw him in the van, and raped him. Huh? Yeah, they raped him. I know, they didn't beat him up and take his money. They didn't threaten him or drive him to an ATM. They raped him. The victim was so badly hurt, he had surgery and at last report was in serious condition at a hospital. And that's from Texas, by the way. That's from our domestic tranquility file. Our governing officials have sacrificed domestic tranquility in the name of tolerance. And so even if these young gangster thugs are captured and convicted, gosh, what would justice be in this case? My goodness, justice would be swift and painful, I can tell you that. But that's not what they'll get down in Texas, it's sad to say. So let us go from the lack of domestic tranquility file into the culture file, ladies and gentlemen. From the Hollywood Reporter, Rob Reiner is developing a film based on the legal challenge to Proposition 8 in California. You'll remember, folks, that's the California initiative that banned homosexual marriage. And was then, I believe it was defeated in court. Although I've got to tell you, what the courts say these days is not something I put all that much stock in. So I didn't necessarily pay attention. But if I'm not mistaken, Proposition 8, oh yeah, that's right, it was struck down by a homosexual judge and his boyfriend. So Rob Reiner's going to make a movie about it. The Prop 8 movie brings with it a personal connection for filmmaker Rob Reiner. Because he was involved in pushing Proposition 8. He recently participated in a one-night celebrity reading of a New York play based on the trial transcripts. Real exciting, that must have been. A play based on the trial transcripts, the trial to overturn Proposition 8, which banned deviant marriage. In addition to the Prop 8 legal case, Rob Reiner is also focused on getting President Barry Ho reelected. Yes, that's right. Barry Ho, our affectionate pet name for the President of the United States, 44th president. By the way, if you're into numerology at all, just roll that one around in your head for a little while. 44th president, Barry Ho. Rob Reiner's working to get him reelected. He says, quote, "Those are the things that are most important to me." Allowing deviant perverts to get married in public in front of God and everybody. In fact, even invoke the name and the blessing of God on their deviant, corrupt unions, and getting Barry Ho reelected. Rob Reiner says, Prop 8, he says, quote, "If we can win that, it'll be the last big piece of civil rights, the last big piece of the civil rights puzzle that will be put into place." Okay, that's Rob Reiner's view of civil rights. As an entire class of human beings, right under Rob Reiner's nose, there's an entire class of human beings who are denied their personhood who are actually murdered every single day. But Rob's worried about marrying off the queers and getting invited to the post-inauguration party in the next Obama White House. Now, folks, I've got to tell you something about Rob Reiner. Now, my extremely attractive audio engineer, she may not remember All in the Family from the 70s. She wasn't born yet, that's right. folks, I will confess something to you right now. I was in my 20s before I realized that we were supposed to be booing Archie Bunker and cheering Meathead. I had no idea. I mean, I remember sitting around the McBurney household as a young lad. My dad always laughed uproariously at Archie Bunker. And, well, as far as Rob Reiner and his portrayal of Meathead, let's just say there was some profanity. Not a lot, but there was definitely some profanity. So I didn't realize, I mean, the joke was on me, I guess I should say. The joke was on me. And Rob Reiner turned out to be Meathead. Yeah. Concerning himself for marrying off selfish, self-indulgent deviants while allowing an entire class of citizen to be discriminated against and even murdered right under his big, fat, liberal nose. Meathead, go. You're on your way, Meathead. Back. Put away that guitar, Angus. We get the point. I said we got the point about Rob Reiner. Yeah. Yeah, Rob. You know where you're going, Rob. All right. So those of you in the audience who are caring and kind people, please pray for the repentance of Rob Reiner. And like that. All right. Now let's move into... I'm more apt to pray for the repentance of Angus Young than for Rob Reiner. Probably got a better shot with a rock guitarist than with Rob Reiner. Bon Scott's probably got a better shot of going to heaven than Rob Reiner, and he's already in hell. All right. Now, I do pray for the lost. And not only do I pray for the lost, I get out there and say things that get the attention of the lost and the foolish. And so I'm doing my part. I'm not doing all I could, I admit that. But at least I'm doing my part. Now, are we winning or are we losing? That's always the question in the political horse race. And I can tell you that in the political horse race, for all you conservatives out there, we are losing. Now, that's despite this headline from CNS News. Over this past week, there's a Gallup poll out that says 42% of Americans describe themselves as conservatives. Let's just read it here. Self-professed conservatives, according to the Gallup poll, outnumber self-professed liberals in the United States 42% to 21%. That's according to the latest Gallup poll. Over the past two decades, according to Gallup, the percentage of Americans describing themselves as conservative has gradually increased from 36% back in 1992, up to the current, what was it, 42%. So, if you were judging this as a horse race and taking polls, you would think that conservatives are winning. But the problem is, folks, 75% of self-professed conservatives are liberals. That's the whole problem. The conservatism of today is the liberalism of 40 years ago. Not just liberalism, but bleeding heart flaming liberalism of 40 years ago now passes as conservatism. An amazing shift has taken place in the definition of conservative. For example, on the pro-life issue. Now, what I want to do here, folks, is give you a little bit of encouragement, because while we might be losing the horse race, the eventual victory goes to the folks who don't give up and stick to their guns. For example, on the pro-life issue, it used to be that your average empty-headed reporter would ask your average vacuous Republican, are you pro-choice or pro-life? And the conservative, alleged conservative, would just say, I'm pro-life, and just move on. Move on to the next issue. Do you support illegal immigration? Whatever. Where do you come down on the fair tax? They would just move on to the next question. But now I've noticed, folks, that your average Republican can't just say I'm pro-life, because now the empty-headed reporter has had his head stuffed with a little bit of knowledge by the personhood movement growing by leaps and bounds. And your average vacuous reporter now says, well, are you pro-life without exceptions? That's now the second part of the question. That used to never be answered, ladies and gentlemen. So your average Republican was allowed to get away with that one back in the day, but no more. Because here's the thing, folks. The second part of the question, that's the part of the question that can define an actual conservative. They could ask the question this way: are you for or against the killing of innocent people? And the conservative Republican will say, I'm against the killing of innocent people, without exceptions. Can you imagine if they asked that question that way? The conservative would look at the reporter and say, well, what do you mean without exceptions? Of course, without exceptions. But now that question causes Republicans to stumble, i.e. Herman Cain a few weeks ago. I got off the Cain train before the alleged, well, I'm not even going to give any credence to any of the garbage going on. Herman Cain doesn't know where he stands on the killing of innocent people, and so I'm not going to get on that train, if you know what I mean. I'm not going to get on the Cain train. Conservatives outnumber liberals on paper. But if conservatives actually outnumbered liberals, well, we wouldn't have the murder of innocent people under color of law. We wouldn't be marrying off queers. We wouldn't be allowing the government to steal half of our money and give it to losers with Zuccotti lung and the whole rest of it, folks. So if you buy this Gallup poll, you might be a neophyte, and you might need a little bit of education. All right. Now, let's move from the culture file into the ubiquitous personhood file. That's right. Last week was a big week for personhood. Let's go to Newsmax, a story out of Ohio. Organizers behind an anti-abortion personhood amendment in Ohio say they're still working to get the issue on the ballot, even if voters in other states have turned it down. Patrick Johnston, a physician and a personhood amendment organizer in Ohio, told the Columbus Dispatch newspaper, he said, quote, we are never going to give up. This is the greatest human rights crisis of our generation, unquote. That's Dr. Patrick Johnston juxtaposed to Meathead Rob Reiner. I mean, you decide whose side you're on. Me, I'm with Doc Johnston on this. That's just me. Newsmax reports that the proposed amendment declares that a person's life begins at the moment a human egg is fertilized and would equate abortion to murder, because an abortionist would be killing a legally defined person. I just want to congratulate my friends at Newsmax for using the term life begins the moment a human egg is fertilized instead of referring to a fertilized egg, which is a non-entity. But I don't want to beat that dead horse. You already know where I stand on that. I'm just glad someone is finally paying attention and using proper English to define terms in the debate. Now, we have a quote here, back to the Newsmax article, a quote from a spokeswoman for Healthy Families Ohio. That's a group that endorses the murder of innocent people under color of law. They are opposed to the Ohio personhood movement, and she said the amendment will not pass. If they can't even get this passed in a state like Mississippi, they're going to have a heck of a time getting it passed in Ohio. Unquote. That's the advocate of legalized murder. Her name is Sandy Theus. She advocates for the murder of innocent children under color of law. Well, Miss Theus, we will have a heck of a time in Ohio and Florida, and Colorado, and California, and Montana, and North Dakota, and, well, just pick another state, because we're coming for you, okay? We will have a grand old time. Thank you very much, Sandy. Now, Doc Johnston says his group is ready to continue to fight. He says, quote, we have science and divine law on our side. With God's help, we will win, unquote. And the man is a doctor. He's a medical doctor. And I sure do appreciate Doc Johnston being out there. I check him out on Facebook quite often, and I'm a big-time supporter of Doc Johnston and of personhood in general, as you may have figured out if you've been listening to the show for any period of time. Now, the Mississippi vote. First of all, folks, keep in mind, as one of America's leading Christian pastors once said, the majority is evil, okay? And all these articles that were published in the weeks leading up to Mississippi saying that it was probably going to win, I think that was the conventional wisdom, and the conventional wisdom was a little, well, let's just say we were looking through some rose-colored glasses because we were believing things like this Gallup poll that says 42% of Americans are conservative, when the fact is 40-some-odd percent call themselves conservative. And in a poll, 50-some-odd percent said they would vote for personhood and against the killing of innocent people. But when it came right down to nut-cracking time, we found out that, in fact, Mississippi is... If Mississippi is the most conservative state, well, we're in a lot of trouble because it's full of liberals, baby-killing liberals. And, folks, just being a liberal is bad enough, but when you advocate the murder of innocent children, well, it doesn't get much worse than that. So 42% of Mississippians did vote for the personhood of all citizens to be protected by law, their God-given right to life to be protected. 42%. I guess it was the same Christian pastor, probably America's leading Christian pastor, despite the fact that Joel Osteen did get 50,000 downloads on YouTube, thanks to me. Bob Enyart is actually America's leading Christian pastor. Pastors out at Denver Bible Church, come on down and visit. If you live out of state, you should fly out here and just visit one Sunday. You'll see what I mean. He made the point at services this morning that the pro-life industry has proven their own lie because they said that we'd only get 10-15% of people to vote for personhood. And here we got 42%, and they were all against us. National Right to Life, of course, all the liberals, the Catholic bishops, most of the pro-life industry organizations, like the Susan B. Anthony List, Eagle Forum, all the leading so-called conservative outfits were against us, and we got within striking distance of the bastards who are killing children in Mississippi and elsewhere. Striking distance, so all of you liberals, you better be looking over your shoulder because we are within 9 points of you in Mississippi and we're not going away, okay? We're not going away. Folks, think of this as, have you ever watched that show Intervention? Okay? If you're familiar with the setup, there's a point at which you confront, let's say you got a couple of friends who are alcoholics. The first friend being the pro-life industry, Eagle Forum, National Right to Life, Susan B. Anthony List. That's the first friend, alcoholic. And then we have a second friend who's an alcoholic, and that's the American people. Well, folks, we're on the verge of succeeding in the first step necessary for recovery, and that's to get our friends to admit they have a problem. So as we continue forward in the movement here, if we could just get the pro-life industry to admit they have a problem in that they advocate the killing of some people in order to allegedly save others, well, then we will have made a tremendous first step. And in the Mississippi campaign, we did have a couple of former abortion regulators join our side, and that will just continue to grow because we do have the truth on our side, like Doc Johnston says. So that first step that's necessary, we've got to get them to admit there's a problem. And so just getting there is going to take us some time. Rarely does a friend intervene in the crisis of another friend and the friend just immediately turns it all around and recovers from their addiction. The true love of a friend, however, never gives up, even when that love is spurned by the one who needs help. So those of you at Eagle Forum and the Catholic Bishops and National Right to Life, Susan B. Anthony List, other abortion regulators, even though you dislike us right now and you have spurned our affections, we are not going to give up on you because this intervention is necessary Because like they say on that intervention show all the time, if we don't get in there and stop them, that they're surely going to die. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Three strange days indeed. It's been three strange decades, in fact, since the lawyers and the abortion regulators decided to abandon personhood and regulate the murder of innocent people. And so none of us are deluded enough to believe that we're going to get you people to wake up overnight. We know that it might take another three election cycles. And so we're not going away. And in fact, we're glad to do it. Happy to do it. It's called Tough Love, and we're glad to provide that for you. You lost ignorant children, you fools. That's the rank and file. The leadership are actually wicked, evil, and corrupt. Yes, National Right to Life, your leadership is wicked, evil, and corrupt. And, you know, I know that there are liberals who listen to this broadcast who hate National Right to Life. They think that they're rabid anti-abortionists, when in fact they're wicked, evil, corrupt people who would regulate the murder of innocent people, not unlike the administrators at Bergen-Belsen and Dachau and Auschwitz. Yeah, that's National Right to Life. Not to put too fine a point on it. Now, let's move. We were just talking about democracy. And the fact that the majority is evil, wicked, and corrupt, and often vote in their own selfish self-interest. And here's a point out at the United Nations. We're going to go to, well, again, to Newsmax. Newsmax showing this week, showing up with some stuff. We appreciate their efforts. This is a story from, well, Dateline the United Nations as if it's a country. An admissions committee for the UN Security Council adopted a report last week that says the 15-member body, that's the UN Security Council, cannot make a unanimous recommendation to take the Palestinian bid for statehood any further. Yes, the Palestinians are reportedly one vote short of the nine needed in the council. Having eight votes, according to Palestinian Ambassador Riyad Mansour, he says, hey, having eight votes, that's nothing to be ashamed of. And we're not going away either. Unquote. That was Palestinian Ambassador Riyad Mansour. Newsmax reports that as things stand, the Palestinians can count on eight council members. Russia, China, Gabon, Nigeria, South Africa, Brazil, Lebanon, and India to vote yes. How are these loser countries on the Security Council? Oh, I forgot, it's the UN-Security Council. Okay, well, that explains it. Well, all those countries have vowed to vote yes. Meanwhile, Colombia and five other European nations who are on the UN-Security Council have signaled that they will abstain. You know, abstain, yes. That's like the Germans who lived outside of the concentration camps. They abstained from voting. Uh-huh. So that's what five European nations are going to do. And, of course, the United States, the Barry Ho administration, ostensibly will veto the vote on Palestinian statehood. And so, you know, I called this the most seismic event in political history in my lifetime. Several weeks ago, months ago now, is it? When the Palestinians first launched this effort towards statehood. And a lot of people think I'm overreacting, but I'm here to tell you that this isn't going anywhere. Because here's the thing about good people. Good people will work tirelessly in the promotion of righteousness. But the thing the good people have to keep in mind is that there are wicked, evil, and corrupt people on the other side working just as hard with a lot more material satisfaction in their work. See, nothing makes a Palestinian happier than blowing up a Jew, and they get to do that quite regularly, so they get lots of satisfaction. Meanwhile, those of us on the other side, we get very minimal material satisfaction. We get made fun of, mocked, and if we're in the Middle East, we get blown up, killed, burned, beheaded. So for us, it's a spiritual battle, and so we're at a distinct materialistic disadvantage to the enemy. The enemies are people, for example, like those promoting a Palestinian state and those who would like to regulate the murder of innocent people here on our shores. Quick prediction, though, on the Palestinian situation. If Barry Ho is a one-term president, and there's nothing that leads me to believe that that will be the case at this point, if he is a one-term president, he'll have two lasting legacies. The first will be the failure to veto Palestinian statehood. That will be his first legacy. His second legacy will be the nuclear blast that occurs in Tel Aviv shortly before or after he leaves office. That's if he's a one-termer. If Barry Ho is a two-term president, well, the Antichrist will be set up in there, and all that will be going down. No, I'm exaggerating for effect there, but don't take that all too seriously. Barry Ho is not the boogeyman, okay? And there's nothing so bad about Barry Ho that should motivate you to vote for Mitt Romney, okay? Don't be so scared of Barry that you vote for the son-in-law of Lucifer himself. That's Mitt Romney. He's even got the hairdo straight out of hell. It looks like the sides of his hair have been singed white. Have you noticed that? That's from his several visits to hell. Yeah, no. I think Sean Hannity just copies the haircut. Or actually, they might be doing meetings together down there. See, and liberals who listen to this broadcast, they hate Sean Hannity. And it goes back to an axiom that I have touted for many years, in that liberals hate anyone who they think is a conservative or might be a Christian. In fact, you leave the conservative. If they think you might be a Christian, they will hate you. Sean Hannity is a case in point. Mitt Romney, an even bigger case in point, proving my axiom. That's why they hated George W. Bush so much. They thought he might be a Christian. Now, if they'd actually looked into his actions and his political positions over the years, they would know that there's just no way George W. Bush could be considered a Christian. But they think he might be, and so they hate him for that. Now, I got off track there. I've already gone back into the Bush administration. That's kind of embarrassing, folks. I apologize for bringing that up. I know we're just about getting over all that. All right, let's talk more about the government now. And this is from, well, I can't, this is from either the War File or the Justice File. The two files kind of meld together in this story. This is from the Statesman. And they report that victims of the 2009 shooting rampage at Fort Hood have filed a lawsuit, claim seeking about $750 million in damages. The claimants include family members of eight of the people killed during the rampage. First of all, I want to take issue with the editorial board there at the Statesman, if indeed you have one. They open it up, victims of the 2009 shooting rampage. You can't be the victim of a rampage, okay? A rampage is not an animate being. These were the victims of Nadal Hassan, Major Nadal Hassan, who everyone and his brother knows shot these people, because there's, I think there's 38 eyewitnesses who survived, who all point to the same guy, for crying out loud. Anyway, they were the victims of the killer. Not victims of the rampage, but this is just another example of the Columbia School of Journalism doing their job, training reporters to be foolish and stupid. Let's see. The claims, back to the Statesman article. The claims allege that that federal agencies bowed to political correctness in ignoring warning signs regarding Major Nadal Hassan. You know, the warrior of Allah on his ID card? I forget. Anyway, the emails between him and Al-Laki, you know, there were a few warning signs that were ignored. Fort Hood officials, as we go to air today, have not commented on the lawsuit. But ladies and gentlemen, there's a simple solution to the lawsuit, and our government should be able to offer these victims true justice in the form of offering them the life of Major Nadal Hassan. And that would satiate the hurt and the pain that these victims have suffered. We simply offer them the life of Nadal Hassan for the life of their lost loved one. But folks, when the government lacks the wisdom and now even the ability to do what is right, the victims of the government's own wrongdoing are left to seek monetary relief. And I'm interested to see if you ask these family members which form of justice they would prefer. My guess is that they would take Hassan's life over the money. That's just my guess. But here's what they are reduced to do is seeking monetary damages for the life of a loved one, which is insulting, frankly, to the life of the loved one and their memory, and an even graver insult to the state of justice in this nation and the politically correct government that is hell-bent on driving us over the cliff into the abyss, whether it's Barry Ho at the helm or Mitt Romney. Or Newt Gingrich. Has Newt come up in the polls enough for us to even mention him? I will admit that my prediction that his political career was over 6 months ago, I hadn't factored in the discomfort level for Mitt Romney. I never thought that Mitt Romney would become so distasteful that people might even think about Newt Gingrich. I mean, there's a commentary on the state of the Romney campaign. All right. Now I got to go back to the domestic tranquility file. You know, if you listen to this broadcast, we talk a lot about criminal justice here because there is an epidemic of violent crime that is engulfing us and threatening our children. And it's up to the normal people. That's us, you and me, the Christians. That's right. We're the normal people. Everyone else is sick, demented, and delusional to one degree or another. That's right. We're normal. You're not. Okay? It's up to us normal people to remind the governing officials, our cultural and civic leaders, about the need for justice. And one of the ways I've tried to point it out here on the show is by just regularly chronicling the bloodshed that is awash in the American streets, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to New York City. A father was bringing his son, 4-year-old Cencia Baltazar, back to the women's shelter where the toddler lives with his mother at around 10:30 p.m. Tuesday last week, when police said 17-year-old Mauricio Acosta got into a struggle, the gun went off, and the young 4-year-old boy was shot in the chest. The father wrestled the gun away from one of the alleged muggers and ran after one of the suspects, shooting that suspect in the back of the head on the run. Nice shot. It's a fairly depressing story. That was the one glint of a shining moment there in the story was when the father shot one of the muggers in the back of the head. Police are questioning the father. I wonder if they're asking him why his wife and son are living in a homeless shelter. I suppose that's politically incorrect to ask that. At last report, the child was listed in critical condition at St. Barnabas Hospital, was expected to live, but that's walking home on a Tuesday night in New York City with your 4-year-old. We don't know that this was gang-related. I don't see anything in the story that mentions this was. This is what happens when you walk after dark in certain parts of New York City. Because someone, somewhere along the line, decided that we were going to tolerate violent crime and murder. And so, you know, when you tolerate something, eventually you get used to the stench. And people aren't shocked as much anymore. And there we have it. All right, let's go to the bad religion file. This is from CNS News. 52% of Democrats told Gallup poll that they seldom or never go to church. 27% of Democrats said that they go weekly, at which point Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity got on the air and said, see, they're all these Democrats, you can bet they're not going to church, yeah. Yeah, I can hear Laura Ingraham right now. I'm sure this poll was a part of her show this week. By the way, 38% of Republicans said that they seldom or never go to church, and 40% said they go to church every week. So, to all you liberals out there, you heathens, you filthy, unwashed, ignorant, lost, dying people, I just want to give you some advice in reading this article. With the state of the church today being what it is, I would say across the board, if you're thinking about going to church, don't. Because there's nothing going to ruin you more than going to a modern evangelical or Catholic church if you're a lost heathen who's actually looking for God. If you're actually looking for God, go back and listen to the archive of this show. Go to KGOV.com or fly to Denver and visit Denver Bible Church. Hard for me to give advice on any other churches except for you liberals. If you're thinking about going, well, just think twice. If the church is not strong on creationism, if they're not against homosexuality and baby killing, if they're not against shacking up, if they're not against medical marijuana, don't go to that church. Okay? If they hire Laura Ingraham to come in and speak at any point, don't go to that church. All right. I don't want to beat up on Laura Ingraham too much. But it's just that she gets so googly-eyed whenever she mentions Mitt Romney. It makes me very uncomfortable about what's going to happen to her eternal soul. All right. More from the Bad Religion File? Now, rarely do we get two stories from the Bad Religion File, but this is from WorldNet Daily. Here's the question WorldNet Daily asks. Are gay studies programs at American colleges legitimate academic pursuits or an attempt to push via education an agenda to normalize homosexuality? Unquote. That's the question some of the finest minds in journalism at WorldNet Daily have been reduced to asking a ridiculous question like this. Of course, the universities are engaged in an academic pursuit to normalize homosexuality, my good friends at WorldNet Daily. But we appreciate them pointing this out because there are so many stupid people out there who need to be educated. There's an organization out in California called SaveCalifornia.com, and their president, Randy Thomason, he argues that there is an agenda behind gay studies programs at various universities. That's the lead article, cover of Duh magazine. Thomason contends that the queer studies program is not education at all, but a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or LGBT indoctrination program that hides the facts about homosexual behavior and only serves the purposes of promoting unhealthy lifestyles. And I think he's on point there, Mr. Thomason, but you leave out the fact that it serves the purposes of the lecturer in the class hooking up with various students. That's the main purpose of the courses, yes. I know it sounds very simplistic, right? And I'm naive to think that a lecturer in a homosexual education course would actually be interested in seducing his or her students. Oh, no, they're far too intellectual for that. Oh, yeah. But back to Mr. Thomason. He says this is not academic. This is a minor that will train and teach students to be homosexual, bisexual, transgender, transsexual activists that attack everything good and sacred in our culture. He says it's a boot camp to become a homosexual activist. And he's hitting all around the bullseye. It's actually a boot camp to make them into homosexuals. That's what the queers want. They just don't want the minds of your children. They want their bodies too. And they're coming for them. Okay? And that's why the normal people, that's you and me, the Christians, the normal people, we have to stand up and say stop. And we have to not put our kids into these incubators for deviant sexual behaviors. What does he say? It's a boot camp to become a homosexual. He says this is a train. This is training up an immoral army of soldiers to attack real marriage. Don't be so nebulous, Mr. Thomason. They don't want to attack real marriage. They want to attack your children and my children. That's what they want to attack. Real marriage is just a concept. And yes, they want to attack that. But we need to get to the root of the matter here. They're not just after the politics. They're after our children. This is why even the tolerance of homosexuality as anything other than criminal is a death sentence for any civilization. The homosexual appetite cannot be sated, ladies and gentlemen, because it is not based in that which is normal and natural. Which, by the way, not to put too fine a point on it for all you progressives, normal and natural is one man and one woman married till death do you part, end of discussion. All else, sexually, is criminal. I said criminal, that's right, it's criminal. Now, I hope that the normal mothers and fathers are teaching their kids how evil these people are. You know, even while we witness and pray that they'd repent, we've got to fight those who actively promote an attack not on our politics, but on our kids. All right, now I've gone too long. I can't let the boys play their instruments. I've got to get to the news here. We're rapidly running out of time. I want to get to Penn State. I want to talk about Penn State a little bit here. My extremely attractive audio engineer and I were shocked the other night when it was announced that Joe Paterno was fired because he quite possibly covered up the rape of children by one of his coaches, that riots erupted on the campus of Penn State, ladies and gentlemen. And we couldn't figure out if maybe the college students are just so stupid and so stoned and drunk that they just don't know what's going on. They just know their coach got fired and they're mad and this is a good opportunity to get drunk and maybe meet some girls. Or maybe they're willing to overlook the homosexual rape of children in order to promote their idol, which is that little Penn State Nittany Lion logo that you see at the bottom of every news article now. You see the talking head, and he's got the Nittany Lion logo underneath him, and he's talking about the molestation of children. Anyway, I got a report here from Philly.com. These punks at Penn State toppled streetlights. They flipped over a TV van, threw toilet paper, and yelled obscenities at the cameras. Folks, there's the Bible warns against idol worship. And for those of you who are unwashed, ignorant heathens, you can turn it off because you're not going to understand this at all. But for those of you who are Christians, I just want to give you an analysis, an analogy, I suppose. If you're worried that you might be into idol worship, there's a telltale sign. If you are willing to turn a blind eye to sin in order to maintain your idol, let's say you're a Penn State alumni and you look at that Nittany Lion logo and it just fills you with pride and love. If you're willing to overlook and take and turn a blind eye to sin in order to maintain that relationship, that's idol worship, okay? It's pretty much that simple in identifying idolatry. And I think that these students and a lot of the alumnus at Penn State are participating in idol worship and have participated in it for the better part of a decade, it seems. So, I mean, all the facts aren't out yet, but what is out is pretty disturbing. And, what more can you say? Just keep yourself from idol worship, and there's a good rule of thumb to follow so that you can keep yourself from that. Okay, now all you unwashed heathens out there, you can turn the show back up. I'll talk about something you can show understand, all right? Let's go to the domestic tranquility file. It's from NBC in Chicago. On October 22nd, a neighbor driving by Virginia Perillo's house found her garage door open and her body on the ground unresponsive. Police say Perillo was brutally beaten. Her face was smashed. Prosecutors say DNA evidence found in Perillo's car matched the DNA of one Raymond Harris. Harris left behind his watch after beating Perillo to death. Harris then stole her wedding and engagement rings, took them to a party later that night, and used them to propose to his girlfriend.
Oh my gosh.
Harris was on parole after serving roughly half of his 30-year sentence for attempted murder and aggravated arson back in 1997. So here's another example of someone who should have been dead already killing another innocent person. Folks, it's about time we start holding these judges accountable and juries. If you want to be on a jury in a capital case and you let the bastard go and they kill someone else, you should be responsible. That's all I'm going to say. I'm willing to debate the gradation of responsibility, but there needs to be some responsibility because we need to stop allowing those to live who should be killed, just as we should stop killing those who are innocent and deserve to live. Because the longer we tolerate this dichotomy in our society, ladies and gentlemen, the further we will descend into the abyss. And at some point, there will be no intervention. There will be no opportunity for intervention. Another nation, more cruel and more vicious than ours, will rise and they will destroy and devour us, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. The judgment of God doesn't come magically from God. He doesn't send lightning bolts down. A culture just becomes so disgusting and vile and without any moral guidance that another nation more cruel will simply rise up and devour them. That's the judgment of God, just in case you were wondering about this whole judgment of God thing. Because we hear a lot of Christian preachers talk about God's judgment's coming. And no doubt a lot of them think that God is going to magically, mystically intervene and judge America. But he doesn't have to, folks. As we've pointed out in this broadcast before, judgment is built into the system. It's our job, you and I, the normal people, that's right, the Christians, to keep these poor heathens from falling into it. All right. Now, but we've come to a point where you cannot speak the truth, or you're mocked, or you might even be fired. Here's a story from the LA Times from the war file from Islam is Bad, Pakistan. Major General Fuller, Major General Peter Fuller, deputy commander of NATO's training mission in Afghanistan, made comments posted on Politico. A day later, he was fired. Yeah, he was fired. That's right. What did he say that was so... He called Hamid Karzai's government erratic. He said, "Why don't you just poke me in the eye with a needle?" He says, "You've got to be kidding me. I'm sorry, we just gave you $11.6 billion, Mr. Karzai, and now you're telling me I don't really care? You're going to side with Pakistan?" Well, he spoke the truth. The next day, of course, he was fired. Because you can't speak the truth in a nation that is governed by lies and liars and thieves and murderers. You certainly can't do that. Speaking of thieves, quickly, we're running out of time. I'm going to go a little long. I apologize. From the politics file, over the last year, the Barry Ho administration has aggressively pushed over $400 million, a plan to buy an experimental smallpox drug. Yes. Now, smallpox, you'll remember if you've been paying attention, was eradicated worldwide as of 1978. The only known smallpox exist in locked freezers at a Russian scientific institute and in the locked freezers of the Defense Department of the United States government. But Barry Ho awarded 400 and some odd million to a company whose major shareholder is billionaire Ronald Perelman, who's a longtime Democratic Party donor. Yeah. Now, I said earlier I'm no epidemiologist, but I'm going to quote two epidemiologists right now. D.A. Henderson, an epidemiologist who led the global eradication of smallpox, says regarding this $400 million plan to develop an experimental smallpox drug, he says, quote, "The bottom line is America's only got a limited amount of money," unquote. Dr. Thomas Mack, an epidemiologist at USC's Keck School of Medicine, called the plan to stockpile this smallpox drug, he called it, quote, "a waste of time and a waste of money," unquote. And he is an epidemiologist, by the way. But folks, do the math on this. It's not a waste to bury Ho in the DNC. If they can divert just 1% of the stimulus cash that they've doled out since 2009 into the 2012 presidential, senatorial, and House campaigns, I mean, their return on investment would be around $8 billion. Now, I understand that most of that money is going to go into, you know, various Swiss bank accounts of various politicians, Nancy Pelosi, and others. But they'll probably keep $1 billion for the campaign, and the other seven will go to Nancy Pelosi's relatives, Chuck Schumer's relatives, Barry Ho's relatives over there in Kenya, and Barney Frank's boyfriend's relatives, things like that. All right. So that was pretty distasteful. This whole show's been fairly distasteful, leaving a bad taste in my mouth. I tell you, folks, reading the news every week, I mean, it's like being hit in the face with a cat every day. It just makes you, it brings tears to the eyes, I'll tell you. In fact, case in point, let's go to the politics file. Here's how disgusting the liberals are willing to allow the Barry Ho administration to be. Attorney General Eric Holder said he sent a private letter to the family of murdered Border Patrol agent Brian Terry apologizing for his death. You'll remember, in testimony, Eric Holder would not apologize publicly, but he says that later, he said, well, I sent him a private letter in order to apologize for the death of Border Patrol agent Brian Terry. Oddly enough, ladies and gentlemen, the Holder letter may exist, this is according to the Daily Caller, but it hasn't been published, and friends of the Terry family, as of Thursday, the day after Eric Holder said he sent it, friends of the Terry family and the Terry family say they haven't received the letter. Yeah. They never received a letter. They never received an apology, but portions of this letter were leaked to Politico, and it was published there. So, so the family doesn't get the apology, but Politico gets the apology so that Eric Holder can be propped up by Politico. And the liberal media, they just let this go. I mean, this is shockingly unbelievable. That's something this... Now, this is just lowlife, okay? This is lowlife, self-serving politics at its worst. And that is the daily fare in this administration. And quite possibly for the rest of the American experiment. If the normal people, that's you and I, that's us, the Christians, if we don't stand athwart history and shout, stop. Yes, that's our responsibility. All right, now. Last week, by the way, my extremely attractive audio engineer wants to thank me. Last week, there was nary a mention of any deviant or disgusting foul behavior, but I've got to close with just this one, okay? I'm sorry. Chris Birch, a rugby player, had proposed to his girlfriend and worked in a bank, but then he suffered a freak accident in the gym. He broke his neck and suffered a stroke. He was taken to the hospital, where his girlfriend and family waited for news. But when he woke up, he said, I'm gay. I was always gay. It sounds strange, but he says, when I woke up, I felt immediately different. I wasn't interested in women anymore. I was definitely gay. He and his girlfriend, by the way, were broken up at the time of the accident, and now he's woken up gay, and now he bleaches and gels his hair, and he wears the leather and that whole... He's doing that whole thing. Now... Whether or not the stroke turned Chris gay, or whether he was gay anyway but unaware of it, there's a doctor here, Joe Corner, a spokesman for the Stroke Association. He says, well, strokes can have a big effect on individuals and lead to personality changes. He says, well, whatever his experience is, it seems to have been a positive one, which is great. That's from the Stroke Society. Anyway, this just implies to me that perhaps homosexuality is a mental illness if it's the result of a massive a stroke in the brain. Anyway, maybe I'm reaching too far on that. Should have left that story aside, right, my dear? All right, finally, from Detroit, ladies and gentlemen, The band Nickelback is scheduled to perform the halftime show for the Detroit Lions on Thanksgiving Day. As we go to press, more than 43,000 people have signed a petition at change.org that asks show producers to please, please reconsider their choice. Some comments. Some comments on the impending Nickelback halftime show. One commenter says, quote, "Is this some sort of ploy to get people to leave their seats during halftime to spend money on alcoholic beverages and concessions?" Another comment, "This is completely unfair to those of us who purchase tickets to the game. At least people watching at home can mute their television." A University of Michigan student who signed the petition simply commented, "Why?" And asked if it was because it wasn't the proper musical genre. The student said, "No, it's because they suck." Final comment, one of the petitioners signers summed it up this way, "Haven't the good people of Detroit been through enough?" Unquote. That's it, folks. That's the Worldview. I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personage USA, American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.